Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
And we welcome you back. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri. We're in the middle of a crazy time in boxing. It's a soap opera. There's a lot of drama out there in the business world. There are really good fights, too. We are going to talk about that as well, because that is why we do this, is so we can break down the fights. So we can actually watch boxing. But sometimes the drama and sometimes the business and the soap opera leaks into why we all love this sport, and it takes over, and it becomes really interesting, Chris. And I can't step away from Canelo and this turkey beef. But how are you?
Listen, well, I'm good, but there's always drama. There's always business that people don't ever know about, but it's bubbling to the top, and it's just making things that much more exciting. So people love this stuff. Yeah, I mean, I love it. You love it. I'm sure the listeners love it. The fans seem to love it. So. You're getting to see some of the inner workings of what happens. Listen, these kind of arguments have always happened. These kind of back and forths between fighters and promoters and whatever turkey is, like, this is nothing new. But everything is exposed nowadays. So we're getting a nice inside treat to what's going on with the inner workings behind the scenes.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know, that don't pay attention to that, because there is a large portion of fans that are like, just I only watch Saturday night, like, right. I'm fed up with the business side of things. For those that don't know, like, Turki Alaşık, he is the new promoter in boxing, he's the new money man, and he's throwing money all around. You know that by now. His latest during the Crawford Madrimov fight week, which was Riyadh season's first foray into the U.S. market, so they wanted to make a splash. And boy, did they ever. I mean, they spent a lot of money. The fight card, the concert.
Took 8 hours of people's lives.
8 hours. I was there all week. The fight week was extravagant with the locations. They definitely made a statement that first week. But Turki also made a statement on the broadcast. Before Crawford even stepped in the ring with Madrimov, he's like, I have an offer out to Canelo Alvarez to fight Crawford. He would be smart to take this offer. And according to Canelo never even responded to that initial offer, never got an initial offer. So then Turki puts out another message and says, you know what? I'm not interested anymore in Crawford Canelo. I don't want it. I don't want it. So we're moving on from Canelo, and we're focusing on Crawford versus some of the bigger names at 154. So then they go ask Canelo, who has a fight week with Berlanga, about his thoughts on Turki, and he says, I don't like the way he talks. I don't like the way he operates. I don't like the way he does business. He's going to have to do it my way, not his. Turki then responds. This is like a hip-hop beef. This is like Biggie and Pac. Turki then responds and says, well, I understand why you don't want to take my money, because you're only interested in easy fights. Ever since you lost to Bivol, all you're looking for is easy touches for a lot of money. And even I don't have enough money to pay what you're looking for. So, yeah, it makes sense. Like, Turki is, like, really becoming a boxing promoter, because he's firing off shots like Eddie Hearn does with Crawford. They were going back and forth yesterday. So that is the Turki-Canelo timeline. And I'm watching our listeners, and I'm watching social media take sides on this, because there's a lot of people that love what Turki's doing. There's a lot of people that don't like what Canelo's doing. So the people are taking sides. The Crawford-Canelo fight seems like it's dead in the water. It was never really on to begin with. It's just a lot. It's a lot, and it's juicy. It's fun to sit back and watch it all play out. But Canelo Alvarez is not, up to right now, is not playing ball with Turki Alaşık.
Listen, I get it. Canelo's not there to kiss the ring. And I mean, I don't know if I would be any different if I was him. Like, you're coming into the sport. I've been here, dude. I've been here for 20, 25, 30 years now. And I know, yeah, you're coming to the sport. Yeah, you're doing really good things. But like you said, he's like, I don't need you. I can make big fights. I can also, I don't need to fight the toughest guys, apparently. I can do what I want and still make $30 million a show. So he really doesn't. You know, and even from the beginning, when Canelo threw out the $150 million for Benavidez, yeah, I mean, that sounds like a duck to me. But also, it wasn't completely unfeasible in terms of what kind of money is getting thrown around. So it's like, eh, why not just try my hand? If I don't need to, though, if I can fight three times against guys who really don't really stand a chance for $30 million each, which is kind of what he's doing now. God knows what other money he's making on the outside.
Did you see the 80%?
I didn't know. That's what he's making for this one?
No, he went on Breakfast Club and he started really flexing. He's like, I make 80%. I make 80% of the concessions.
He's flexing everywhere. He's really
He's like, if you open up a soda, I own 80% of that soda. That's what Canelo said.
Yeah, he's definitely feeling himself. So it's but honestly, Turkey's feeling himself too. Do you see the post he's putting out there? Like he's doing the same thing.
Two egos going at it.
And it would be cool if they could work together. It'd be nice if they could kind of check their egos each other and just and make something happen, something spectacular. But I mean, the only thing I really would like to happen is Benavidez and Canelo, and I would love Benavidez to get really paid, which Turkey could help with that collaboration. But otherwise, I mean, I don't care for the Canelo Crawford fight. We said that on our air. I mean, many times. It's a fantasy matchup, two weight classes apart from where they are right now, and it didn't make a whole lot of sense logistically and rationally. It was more of a fantasy matchup, but I mean, these guys are just they're flexing. Even the way, we're going to get into Canelo and Berlanga fight week, so I'll save that. But a lot of flexing going on.
And I don't think that they're not going to work together either. I don't think it's out of the question. Like this is the initial negotiation that's playing out in public, and that's just going to be
De La Hoya freaked out about him coming to his backyard. Next thing you know, they're making a video together, hugging.
Right.
So
this upcoming fight this weekend with Virgil Ortiz is Riyadh Season sponsored. Like they made a deal with Golden Boy. Riyadh Season made a deal with Top Rank. They've made deals with Matchroom. Obviously, they make deals with Frank Warren. They have not made deals with Canelo Alvarez. They have not made deals with Gervonta Davis, and they have not made deals with Naoya Inoue. Those are arguably three of the biggest stars in boxing that have either told Turkey no or are doing their own thing, which is refreshing as well. That's what makes boxing beautiful.
Tim Zhu apparently as well, because did you see that tweet from Turkey saying that the communications were not there, so he's moving on from that? I don't like that maneuver. I don't like that kind of talk either, in terms of you're dealing with guys that matter in the sport. And just because they're not, running to the phone when you call doesn't mean that you shouldn't work with them.
Yeah, I know. He's putting out, he's got the money. He's the money man, and he thinks the money is going to be the end all be all, and it is for a lot of fighters' cases. And he's paying fighters handsomely, which we fully support.
Yes,
and
fully.
For the most part, he's making the fights we all want to see. I always said it's a net positive, but there are some out there. I don't think Tim Zhu exactly falls into this category that don't have to play ball, that are their own economy, and that's Canelo Alvarez. Gervonta Davis is very much aligned with PBC and Al Haymon. He's the number one attraction at PBC right now. And Naoya Inoue is the Canelo Alvarez of the Pacific. He doesn't need to do anything. He could just stay in Japan from the next 10 fights and make crazy amount of money over there. Yeah, we're talking about three of the biggest stars in boxing that I wouldn't say won't work with Turkey, but right now it's not looking good. And if it does bring you Canelo versus Benavidez down the road, then so be it. Yeah, it's all posturing. Like 100, even on Monday when I was with Canelo, he was still saying 150 million. He wasn't backing up off of that money. He's just throwing that out there. But it's very, very interesting time with Turkey. And it was interesting to see Canelo kind of push back a little bit. And I don't know who's left for him to fight out there, because if you take Crawford out of the mix, because I know we don't love that fight, but it's still a money-making type of fight, and you take Benavidez out of the mix because he's at 175, and we all know that fight isn't close to happening, who is Canelo fighting then? Because I asked him this too, and he's like, I want to fight Bivol again. That's what he told me, at least. I was like, there's nothing left for you at 168. They're taking belts away from you. You're fighting Edgar Berlanga. What motivates you? What do you want? Would you go to 175? I said, yeah. If I go to 175, the first name I want is Bivol. I want to avenge that loss.
Hmm.
So that could, and he's also talking about going to Japan, Canelo. Talking about a December fight in Japan.
He should. He should. I don't know against who.
That's what I mean.
On a world tour, you know, you're coming to the close of your career, and it's been a fantastic Hall of Fame career. You're obviously not willing to give the people the fights that everyone wants. Have fun, make money, go to Japan, go to England. Like he should do a world tour. You know, you want to like, you know, I mean, the problem with that is that he's holding the belts. I think that if he's not fighting number one contenders, that he should relinquish the belts. But yeah, go on a world tour. He's earned that.
Berlanga is technically the WBA number one contender, so he's fulfilling that aspect of it. He wouldn't fight the William Skull guy, so the IBF, who does not play around, has taken that belt away. But yeah, he could fight whoever's next up with WBC, whoever's next up with the WBA, and he can do it in different locations across the world to make it something different.
Listen, if I'm Canelo, I drop all the belts and I keep all the money. No more sanctioning fees. I don't know what he pays anyway, but no more sanctioning
fees.
Gotta
be crazy amount.
Go on a world tour. Go fight in Japan. Go fight in England. Go fight at Wembley. You know, fight Chris Eubank in Wembley. Go to Japan and God knows who he can fight out there, but I don't think it's going to matter. You know, like he's at that level now. Just don't hold the belts hostage. Let the next rung of guys step up and become champions and make a name for themselves the way that you were able to. So, you know, that to me is giving back to the sport. Yes, you go on a world tour. Yes, everyone gets to see you. Everyone gets to see what a Canelo Fight Week is. Because guys, listen, we go to Canelo Fight Weeks all the time. Dan and I, we have a blast. Canelo Fight Weeks are a lot of fun. They're awesome. They're different. This is different energy. Everywhere you go, it's awesome. It's really fun. So it would be cool for him to take that on the road. But just give out the belts, man. You're saving money anyway. You're doing this for money at this point. Get rid of the belts.
He's doing it for money.
Give out the belts. Don't pay sanctioning fees. Give out the belts. Go fight everywhere else. Let everybody else fight. If you don't want to fight the number one guys, the real number one guys, give them up and then go fight.
There's no one left at 168. There's really no
one
left.
And Billy's, you know, I mean, Billy's got to get past Derevchenko, which he should win, but he's, you know, it's still a tough fight. You can't just look past the guy, but
that's not like, I'm talking about like no. Marquee fight. We're talking about Canelo Alvarez. This is the face of boxing. Like Mayweather towards the end, you know, was still in big fights for the most part. And was still looking for the biggest names. Like the Maidana fight was still
Cotto, Maidana.
I mean, Berto was not. I mean, Mayweather
no, Berto,
was.
Berto was like was. A Berto was like a. Here you go, buddy. Take this because he's a friend. Take this, and I'm out of here.
Right, and the McGregor thing was one of the biggest fights to ever happen.
That was huge. That was like a commercial success against a guy that could not beat him.
Yeah, that's any one of us would have done the same thing. But my point is, like, you got your Canelo Alvarez. You're 34. You're still on top of your game. Like, I don't know how much longer you could fight these opponents where we kind of know the outcome before you head in. Like, the biggest fights are at 175 now. It's Bivol. It's the better Bivol winner. It's Morel. Not so much Morel after his last performance. But
75 is just too big, Dan. Like,
well,
I don't want to say he got lucky. I don't think he got lucky. He handpicked Kovalev and was able to negotiate the fact that they fight very close to his last fight, which is a very, very tough fight against Anthony Yard. And it was a damaging fight for Kovalev. But also there's word on the street, Kovalev likes his vodka after fights.
That's confirmed.
They booked that fight very close after that fight. So one, he didn't get to recover from the very difficult fight with Anthony Yard. And also, he normally takes a really long camp because he's got to get the booze out of his system. He's got to go strength train. You know, before he didn't really have that. And you kind of saw that in the fact that he ran out of gas late. So, yeah, you get that win. You snuck by at 75. You got that. But, like, okay, that's not your weight class, dude. You're way undersized. He was losing that fight, too, by the way. Kovalev was out jabbing the hell out of him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Night.
Yeah. So, and then he goes to, you know, fight Bivol. Bivol, I mean, there's no question that he won that night. And I don't think he ever beats Bivol. So, I don't think 75 is it. I don't think he beats any of those guys.
He's in a weird spot, but he doesn't care.
No.
Watching him walk around, hanging out, being around him on Monday, the guy's got unbelievable swag. Yeah. He's got unbelievable aura. He remembered me. He said,
the drip guy?
He goes, the drip guy. And I was like, oh, my God. This is what it is. I have something in store for him in September. A big surprise when it comes to drip. But he just, like, I'm just watching him walk throughout New York City, the man, people just fawning over him.
He's a cool guy, dude. He's a very
understands
cool guy.
Understands that he's the man. He's got a strut. I'm watching him yesterday in L.A., walking around on a social media show and the press conference. Just knows who he is, very comfortable in his skin. Doesn't care. Doesn't really care anymore. He's 34. He's made close to $250 million.
Dan, he wears pajamas to press conferences. He doesn't need – he doesn't care. Like, he's been doing this for years.
But, like, the point – he can just keep doing this. Like, he doesn't have to fight Benavidez, even though we did a little interview. And he's like – and I had to ask. I was like, all right, so why Berlanga, not Benavidez? And he says, blah, 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 Puerto Rico versus Mexico, all the lines that they have been spouting out during this. And I was like, will you ever fight Benavidez? What's it going to take? And he said, it's going to take a lot of money. And he goes, all Benavidez brings to me is 25 extra pounds on fight night. So I was like, would you put a rehydration clause? And he thought about it. And he goes, I don't want to say right now. Probably will. Will you eventually fight him? And he goes, well, this is what they said about Mayweather. This is what they said about Lara. This is what they said about Trout. This is what they said about Cotto. This is what they said. He went through his whole resume. Billy J. Saunders. And I fought them all. So I was like, yeah, I think you will fight Benavidez one day. I think it will happen one day. And he kind of like shook his head like, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. He kept saying, we'll see. So I don't know. The point is that I think he's running out of options now. He had this avenue with Turkey to make a fight with Crawford. He had this avenue with Turkey to potentially make a fight with Benavidez. He's saying, I don't need you right now, at least. Who knows if that changes. But what does this all mean for Crawford? Now it's pretty cool. Crawford's staying at 154, which is the wise move. And like he already put out an Instagram post and said, what's up, 154? Mm-hmm. He didn't say, what's up, Canelo? All week long, Eddie Hearn was talking about the Canelo fight. Every media member was asking Terrence Crawford about the Canelo fight. Crawford didn't bring up Canelo, but when he was asked about Canelo, he was more than happy to answer that question and say that I really want to fight Canelo Alvarez. But the end of this, like through all this shrapnel of these guys going at it, is Crawford's going to stay at 154 and potentially fight Virgil Ortiz or potentially fight Sebastian Fundora or Tim Zhu. And that's good. Like that's where Crawford really should rest the next four or five fights of his career, is try to become undisputed at 154. You could be undisputed at 140, 147, or 154. Now you're talking, you already are all time, but now you're like, could make a case like you and Floyd are two of the best of this last two generations.
I mean, he can, we're getting to the point where Crawford can make a run at being the best fighter who's ever lived. You know, especially if he's able to keep this going at 36 plus years of age and get another undisputed title. You know, granted, we live in the world of, you know, the era of undisputeds, because we're seeing more and more of them, but we're not seeing guys do it in multiple weight classes. And if this guy can do it in three weight classes in a row, that's crazy. And also to manipulate and maneuver, you know, the minefield that is the boxing business with everything that's going on. And he's lived through a lot of crazy times. If you really look at his career, like, you're looking at the stock market crash back in 08. You know, he was around then. You're looking at, you know, he's probably just turned about the term pro about that time. You know, COVID. He went through COVID. Now he's living through the Turkey era. You know, he
lived through the Top Rank era.
He was with Top Rank for a long time. You know, so he's been through a lot. He's been through
getting
this
4 or 5 million to fight Felix Diaz, to fight Jeff Horn.
Was he even making that much then? I don't think so.
Well, he was about to. I know that his final like 4 or 5 fights with Top Rank, he was making like what Top Rank does. Like they tap out at like 4 or 5 million per fight, and it's not the best competition. And he's fighting in Omaha and selling out those crowds, knocking people out, building up. But you're right; he's been through a lot, and I feel like he's like peaking at 37, just like me.
I was saying yesterday when I was talking to Paulie Malignaggi, like if you think about his last two fights. The cards that he's fought on, you know, like he fought on this crazy Riyadh season card, but that's like, right now it's a one-off. It's only happened one time. Yeah. There's more supposed to happen, but what was the card that he fought last time? That was, Spence when he fought Avanesian.
Oh, that was the BLK Prime.
Right. So that was a literal one-off.
He lived through that too.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. He's living through these weird errors. Yeah. He got paid a ton.
He's not complaining. He's not like suing them or anything.
No. I mean, he got paid a little bit late, apparently, from what I understand, but still got paid. But yeah, he's lived through a weird era and jumped from different promoters and been able to do things finally his way. It took a long time, obviously. but you figured it out. It's just the career of Terrence Crawford is going to be a really interesting one to look back on. I know we're still in it, but like once it's over, we're going to look back at this thing and be like, yeah, this guy very well may be the best fighter who's ever lived.
It's right there in front of him. He can it's an intriguing weight class. There's winnable fights at 154. We talked about this on the last episode. Put out a clip, getting some pushback because there are some people that just really don't believe in Terrence Crawford, or the switch up on him is insane. Like, he doesn't knock out Madrimov. His 11 fight KO streak ends. No, Madrimov is unknown, 10 fights. So therefore, like, there's a lot of people that aren't believing in Crawford. There's a lot of people that saying he beat a cripple, quote unquote cripple, in Spence, who was not being called a cripple when he was beating up on Ugas and the fight that he had before that. No one had Spence as a cripple heading into the fight with Crawford. That was the most 50-50 fight week vibes that I've been a part of in my somewhat short/long boxing media career. You would agree too, Chris. We were going back and forth the day of the fight, Saturday. I was like, flip a coin. So all of a sudden now,
I was publicly flip-flopping. I was on shows saying,
on a different shows saying different picks.
Yeah, I said that Crawford was going to stop him on Pro Box. I said that Spence was going to win on our show.
Hedging your bets, bro. That's very smart.
Nah, it's just that, but that's what kind of fight it was. It was very intuitive. It was very the feeling of the day.
Yeah, so the switch up on Crawford is crazy, but that's just going to come when you're at this level, when you're at the top, when you're top 3 pound for pound. There's going to be doubters. There's going to be people that don't believe in you, poking holes at his resume, but he's got it right in front of him. He can, you know, this Virgil Ortiz fight could matriculate. Not that Virgil has a belt, but the Fandora situation is very interesting too, because now they were waiting. Fandora Spence is supposed to be next for WBC, and then the WBO belt becomes vacant. Or Fandora can activate the WBO clause and fight Crawford for the WBO, and the WBC becomes vacant. So there's Fandora out there. There's Zhu out there, who's now been ordered to fight the IBF champion. So it's a very fun division with fun names, winnable fights for Crawford. I'm happy that throughout all this Turkey, Canelo, Messi arguments, that it seems like Crawford is going to stay at 154, and it seems like he could do some historic things, and that's fun. And I can't wait to watch how it all plays out the next 18, 24 months for Bud. Canelo Berlanga press conference. A little bit of a stinker in New York. And I don't want to take credit for this, but I interviewed Berlanga and I was like, bro, you need to be the heel. Everyone hates you already. He didn't even know what a heel was. He goes, what's a heel? I said, the guy that everyone hates. Oh, yeah.
Remember in pro wrestling? Remember the guy that he didn't like?
Yes. I was like, dude, lean into the heel. Everyone hates you anyway. Like, no one, you're not getting any fans throughout this buildup. So go after Canelo. That was on Monday. I'm not saying he took my advice and he did it, but Monday's presser was all the same nonsense. Like, thank you, Canelo. Thank you this. Thank you that. Tuesdays in LA, Chippy Canelo doing some type of dry humping. Amazing.
That was interesting.
They're both screaming at each other. I'm actually now intrigued. All it takes is one nice press conference where this young, brash, oblivious guy in Berlanga, who doesn't even deserve the chance, is going after the king. And the king is laughing, saying, you hit like my son. I'm going to knock you out in 8 rounds. You bring nothing to me that I haven't seen already. You're nothing. You're nothing. And Berlanga is just like, you know, doing all sorts of antics. I liked it. I thought that's what this promotion needed. I hope they use it more and they keep doing more media, because it definitely needs this type of attention, because it's not the best matchup. But our guy Berlanga, you were calling for this too. Munguia was too respectful. Play the heel. Mm-hmm. Piss off Canelo. Piss off the fans.
Hey, and listen, if Canelo thinks that Berlanga hits like his son, that's not a good mindset to have. are we seeing these face-to-faces?
Huge.
Berlanga's huge. And I told you that one day on one of our shows, or maybe we weren't on a show, but I'm like, you stood next to Canelo. You see how not big he is?
Yeah.
Have you stood next to Berlanga?
Yeah.
Have you stood next to Berlanga? Big guy. He's a really big guy. You're not anywhere near the size of Berlanga. Very, very big guy. And Berlanga's got fast hands. He obviously has some power. Obviously, he hasn't really shown it much at the world-class level, but it doesn't matter. The guy is big and young, and he's got quick hands. He can punch. you know, and it's funny you mentioned the, you know, being the heel. We have the same manager. That's Keith Connolly, the best manager.
He said me and you are starting to look the same. I was like, okay, I'll take it.
All right. You tell him you've been lifting weights?
Yes. I said I'm on a regimen. Before you know it, I am Chris Algieri.
There you go.
Keith Connolly.
Keith Connolly. So he was my manager when I was fighting as well at the end of my career. And he always used to say, like, man, you got to play it up. You got to play it up. And that was not me. He was like, I'll take your shirt off at the press conference. Like, getting the guys. I'm like, man, that's not my brand. I can't do that. I can't bring that.
You should have done it once just for the
my last. Next career. It's not really my thing. It just would be too contrived. I'm honestly, you know, it's funny. People think I'm super cool. I'm way too hot-headed for that shit. I would be the guy punching people at press conferences. I'm not gonna play a role. I'm gonna punch you in your face.
He's the fighting collegian, but he will punch you in the face at a press conference.
I kept my cool for a reason. But yeah, it's funny that Berlanga has now taken this role. I hope he sticks with it throughout the promotion because
he did take his shirt off.
Really good. Yeah, he looked good. He looks fit.
He came out with I was behind the stage. Canelo was standing kind of like next to me, and he looks over and they're introducing Berlanga, and he's got his shirt off. Canelo starts laughing and he starts saying stuff in Spanish to his friends. And I looked over at him and I did like the motion, like, you got to take yours off. And he went to go mess
to Canelo?
Around. Like, yeah. And he went to go take it off and laughed and was giggling with all his buddies. That was kind of cool. And then he walked out on the stage. That was the New York one. But yeah, Berlanga, like, he has no shot. No one's giving him a chance. You know, he's saying that, like, listen, no one's giving me a chance. And this is like what's driving me. And that's great.
I wonder what the betting lines are going to be.
Well, they're not. I don't think they've moved, but like it's still. I can go on DraftKings right now, but like, yeah, it's great.
They'll move during fight week, but I mean,
during fight week, yeah. But right now, Canelo's probably -700 at least. Berlanga, you can say all these things like I got all the odds against me. No one wants me. Well, that's great, but like, how you're really going to sell this fight is to talk shit, be young, all the jewelry. There's nothing like people love to hate. And boxing fans love to hate. They hate this guy already. This guy bit an opponent. This guy was over. They feel like he was overhyped by Top Rank with the KO streak. Just freaking lean into it even more. Like, go on every interview possible. Say Canelo ain't shit. Like, talk about how rich you are now and everyone out there is never going to make the amount of money that I'm going to make in one night. Like, do that whole thing. Because that's
people either want to see you win or they want to see you get your ass kicked. That's the only way to sell. Only way to sell. And, you know, Floyd knew that. Floyd's like, well, I can outbox guys. I'm not really going to be knocking guys out. I'm not really kicking guys' asses. But I can be a real shithead. So people want me to get my ass kicked and get beat up and get knocked out. And people are going to pay for that. Super, super smart move. Berlanga can lean into that and make himself some more money and get himself some more attention. I mean, he's gotten a ton of attention in his career already. He's done a good job inside and outside the ring. 16 straight first round knockouts. So get everybody looking.
So his stock was huge at one point.
Huge. He was a big, big deal.
2021.
I was working those Top Rank shows when he was coming up. And I remember Carl Moretti from Top Rank kept asking me, long time, you know, guy's been in the business forever, as long as we've been alive, you and I, Dan. And he's like, is this kid for real? And I'm like, I'm in the gym with him. Trains hard. He's in shape. He can punch. He's like, is he for real? Can he really punch? I'm like, I mean, look at him. He's got 16 first round knockouts. I don't know how to argue with that. No, I don't know how to argue with that.
Yeah. And I was thinking in 2021 ish, I remember I used to call his fights on at King's Theater in Harlem when he was with Real Deal Promotions. And that's when I was just starting calling fights and doing media. And he was like 6-0. And before we did the interview, I just was like, bro, do you remember King's Theater? You were 6-0. Like, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I was like, that's pretty cool. You know, like, and now you're about to fight Canelo. That's pretty awesome. But yeah, like, I thought one day this guy will fight Canelo. Like, I thought one day this guy will be a star. Like, he had Fat Joe with him. He had this whole aura about him as you know, being from New York. And it obviously faded. And for him to get into the ring with Canelo now is a testament to Keith Connolly and is a testament to Eddie Hearn. But who knows? One punch is all it takes. Dude hits like a mule, is much bigger than him. If Canelo overlooks him, I mean, the most insane thing would be to see Canelo get chinned. Like, we've never seen it.
No.
Canelo gets dropped.
He's got the best chin in the sport.
Canelo gets dropped early, and the crowd is just in utter shock. but he obviously rallies to win. Would it be like if you could script out a fight, script for this fight, -1400, bro. Canelo Alvarez is one of the biggest favorites you'll see.
Wow.
-1400 right now. And to put it into perspective, Naoya Inoue. No, that doesn't put it in perspective at all. Naoya Inoue is -4,000 against TJ Dani. He's even bigger.
Well, this will put it into perspective. I was 15-1, so -1500 against Ruslan Provodnikov when it first came out.
Wow.
Beginning of camp. So
you
made, that's what we're at right now.
A lot of people money on that. On that night.
Also, the by the time it closed, it was 4-1, 3.5-1 actually, because everyone got wind.
Huntington got wind.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was training in Vegas, and people kept coming by camp and seeing me whoop everyone's ass, and they were like, this guy can do it.
Canelo Berlanga is about a month away. You can order the fight on PPV.com. We will be out in Vegas. We will be in the live chat. The live chat is starting to gain a lot of momentum. It's how you can interact with other fans, how you can interact with a Jim Lampley. We were in there for 7-8 hours on this Riyadh season card where, you know, big knockouts were reacting right away. That's a pretty cool feature of the PPV.com experience is the live chat. Also, no subscriptions. You don't have to sign up for anything.
Love
you
that.
Can go fight by fight, stream it to your phone, tablet, big screen TV. PPV.com is our presenting sponsor. They send us to big fights. They're a big part of our show, and they should be a big part of your boxing viewing experience. They're the best.
Guys, it's the only way I watch big fights. So every big fight that I watch is PPV.com. I'm like, where's my access code? How do I get in?
There you
I
go.
I need to watch a fight. Pop. I need to get in. Get me in.
Yeah, Chris will be in the chat, too. He's always up in there. Lance Pugmire, our friend Lee Gross from CompuBox is in the chat. You never know who's going to pop into the chat. That's what makes
it's
it kind of
It's
fun.
A nice rotation. It's a nice...
Yeah, because I'm on Twitter a lot during fights, and it's not like the same as like I'm just firing off tweets, and there's like I'm getting a feel for what everyone else is thinking out there. It's like if you're watching the fights not at a party... Like Twitter can kind of serve as like your little like party through the digital thing, digital mm-hmm. side. But if you with the chat, you can interact like in real time. So that's pretty damn cool. Let's get into our previews for this fight weekend. We'll start with Virgil Ortiz versus Sergey Boychuk, 154 pounds. I love this fight. This fight will not go the distance. A combined 45 fights for these two guys, Boychuk and Ortiz, 44 knockouts. In the 45 fights.
That's awesome.
Obviously, Ortiz one is 21.
Fight. One,
yes,
distance,
one
fight.
Distance fight. One distance fight was Boychuk.
His last fight against Mendoza, who's got an iron chin, apparently, whose right. face
you
was destroyed at that fight.
Out.
No.
It's a very close fight, too. Virgil Ortiz is only a -290 favorite in this. Boychuk, a +220 underdog. That's according to DraftKings.
That's probably about right, honestly. It's a close fight, but I lean Virgil.
Yeah, they usually get it right, Vegas, with these odds. This fight has a lot of juice now.
Unless it's a Riyadh season card, then they're completely wrong.
Then they get blown up, and people make a lot of money. Like Martin, people made a lot of money on Bacoli, and people mm-hmm. made a lot of money on Jose Venezuela. I am not
Brits
one of them.
Made money on that Bacoli.
Who did your brother?
No, the Brits.
The Brits. Oh yeah, people that knew about Bacoli and were not thinking.
A lot of my British friends were like, "Yeah, watch this fight. He's gonna win." I'm like, all right.
I was hearing that all week in L.A. But this fight right here, 154, Virgil Ortiz, Sergey Boychuk. It's the hottest division in boxing. Virgil Ortiz is being dangled as a potential opponent for Terrence Crawford next. He has got to get past Sergey Boychuk, though. We know about Virgil Ortiz. We know how good he is at 147, or good he was at 147. We know his struggles with the weight towards the end. He has exactly one round at 154 pounds. Came against Thomas Delorme in April. I still think the world of him. There are some question marks remaining or out there for Virgil Ortiz. This is a legit test. This is a legit fight at 154 because Boychuk is not any type of walkover.
No, Boychuk's a wrecking ball. This is a very tough out. And this whole talking about Virgil Ortiz and Crawford next, you cannot disrespect Boychuk.
That's a turkey special.
Yeah, you can't do that. This guy is very, very dangerous. He's come a long way since that one loss to Bryan Adams, who, man, he is a tricky, tricky guy and a good puncher. Ton of experience, way more than Boychuk had at that time. But since then, he's been on a tear. He looked fantastic dismantling Bryan Mendoza. Bryan Mendoza is a guy who gives everybody trouble. He knocked out Fandora. He was in that fight with Zou. Yes, was ultimately outclassed, but was very much in that fight. Boychuk, he was not in the fight. Bocek was able to dominate him, beat him up, had his face swollen out to here. I was actually surprised Mendoza was able to finish that fight. Bocek is tough. Super, super strong. Physically strong, wiry, a true 154 pounder, which Virgil Ortiz has not. Virgil. I keep mixing up Virgil and Victor. Virgil Ortiz has not been with a true 54 pounder. He's been fighting blown up 47 pounders. Also, he's only had two rounds in the last, what, Dan, 2.5 years?
Yep.
He had 2 1 round blowouts, did Virgil Ortiz. So the fresher guy is actually, or the guy who's been in more rounds lately is Bohochek. He had a 12 rounder with Brian Mendoza 6-7 months ago. That's a lot of good experience.
Not even.
Four months ago. Thank you. And Ortiz, 2 rounds in 2 years against blown up welterweights. Yeah, this is a very, very interesting matchup.
I know. I wouldn't look past Bohochek. And not only that, like the mental aspect of Chris, you've been here before where, you know, if you win this fight, you could potentially fight Manny Pacquiao. If you win this fight, you could potentially fight this guy. You know, Virgil Ortiz has been sitting on the sideline, to your point, 2 rounds, 3 rounds in the last 2 years. He's chomping at the bit. Like, this is a guy that, like, during his KO streak, just like we saw KO streak with Berlanga, like, they were hyping this guy up to be the next big thing. It was him versus Boots. It was big fights out there. He's the second coming in the welterweight division.
Stanionis, that fight was snake-bitten, apparently.
Right. So, like, he's human. Like, Virgil Ortiz is human. I understand he seems to operate different than a lot of the quote-unquote superstars out there, the divas, like Ryan Garcia, Teofimo, Devin Haney, all of them. He's different, Virgil Ortiz. I think that's very clear. But he is human, and he hears his name being thrown out there with a potential Crawford. You know, he had that back and forth with Ryan Garcia. Riyadh Season is now sponsoring Golden Boy. So, like, he knows what's out there. Like, he knows that there is life-changing money out there. I don't think he's going to look past Bohochek, but it has to creep into your mind. I think you can touch on that. Like, looking ahead, when you have a fight in front of you.
I'd be more worried about him actually being stale for this fight. Not so much not looking at this fight as a big fight, because it is a big fight, but he's been wanting a big fight for so long, and he's been so close to a big fight for so long. 2.5 years is a long time, especially in a young man's career. So, you know, that Stanionis fight was huge. And it got pushed back, and it got pushed back, and it got pushed back, and then it's off. So, yeah, I'd be more worried about him being stale and not exactly ready for the moment to step up. Because if you're a step behind, you're in the dust at this level. So I just hope that, you know, that staleness does not carry over into fight night, and that he understands what this is, that his body and his mind are prepared. And this is almost a can't miss fight, unless one of them knocks the other one out quick, which is very possible. Both guys hit hard. Both guys are explosive. I lean towards Virgil. I think he's more athletic, more dynamic. And I think he's got a better upswing in terms of his potential. But this is a tricky, tricky fight. It can go a lot of ways.
Yeah. I love it. I think it's a little, I wouldn't say risky, but it's the right move for Virgil. He's at the top of all the rankings. This is technically, I think, for Bohochek's WBC interim title, which to many fans doesn't mean anything, but there is some type of meaning to that where the winner of this just inches up further to Fundora, who has the WBC belt, or Spence, if Spence beats Fundora, or if they fight. So there's that going for it as well. But I'm just curious to see how he looks. Like, I see a lot of people out there saying, oh, Virgil Ortiz, he can knock out Terrence Crawford. And I say, yeah, maybe. And, like, I mean, he has the power, but he also has one round at 154. He has 2 rounds since 2022. 2 rounds. He didn't fight in 2023. He fought Frederick Lawson in January of this year. KO1. Yes. Thomas DeLorme, blown up welterweight.
Blown up 40-pounder.
Knocked him out in round one.
Well, Crawford at 140 for the WBO title.
Yes, I remember that. So I pumped the brakes a little bit on Crawford, but he can change the whole narrative this weekend. And I think it's very much needed for him. I think it's very much needed for his career. And it's great. That's the beauty of boxing, is like, this is a true test. He aces this test. He beats Bohochek. Okay, now you're in the discussions. Now you're another name at 154. You're bona fide. But Bohochek is freaking tough, man. This whole card, it is coming to you on DAZN. from Las Vegas, Charles Conwell, who is another really good 154 pounder, just doesn't have the push. He's signed with Golden Boy. He's fighting Kieri Gray. Kenneth Sims Jr. is on this card. Was a
Kenneth Sims is good boxer.
Top ranked guy. He's fighting Gabriela Fundora, sister of Sebastian. Mm-hmm. She's the IBF flyweight champion. She's defending her title. And then it is a full card. That's over on the Zone. That was probably, we'll have a lot of eyeballs on it because of Virgil Ortiz. Over to Albuquerque, New Mexico, where our very own Chris Algieri will be on the call once again on ESPN. He did such a good job in that Teofimo fight. They said, we got to have you back. We're sending you to Albuquerque, where they make the meth, where Breaking Bad is. Chris, don't do any meth. You're back, baby. ESPN, let's go.
It's nothing to do with how good I did. The only reason I'm back is because I didn't get fired. It has to do with Tim Bradley.
Who
are
you replacing again?
Tim. I'm stepping in for Tim. Tim, I don't know if Tim's away or whatever. But yeah, Tim is not available for this one, so I'm stepping. I'm the backup. I'm the backup when Tim isn't available. I believe it's Tim who probably throws me in there. So that's my guy. But the only thing I had to do last time was just not get fired, but it did go well.
It did go well. You did a very good job. A lot of our listeners obviously loved it, but a lot of the Twitterverse enjoys your call. So you'll be on the call for Angelo Leo going up against Jose Alberto Lopez.
Good fight.
Featherweight banger. Is Joe Tess on the call?
Yep.
Okay, good. Joe Tess,
Bernardo Asuna, myself, Joe Tess, and Mark Kriegel.
Mark Kriegel, the dream team, the fearsome foursome. For this main event on ESPN coming from New Mexico, which is the hometown of Angelo Leo, and that is an important piece of this because Luis Alberto Lopez is the ultimate road warrior. It's him and Usyk. Remember, Usyk was going into these opponents' hometowns and just beating them down and picking up belts. Luis Alberto Lopez is doing that, but not to the degree of Usyk. You know, he went into Belfast and he beat Conlon. He went into Leeds and he beat Warrington. He beat Isaac Lowe in London. He just fights on the road, 10-1 on the road with 5 knockouts, picking up a title along the lines.
Knocks guys out, walks away, doesn't even look at them. Like, just a badass.
He's a badass, but I feel like he should be getting a little more publicity. Maybe that comes with an in-a-way fight down the line at featherweight, but that's like a while ways away.
Well,
but
he kind of came home, quote unquote, and he had the fight with Juet Gonzalez and didn't really impress and had a tough fight.
Right.
But Gonzalez is super tough. Juet's been in with everybody, gave everybody
that
trouble.
That was in California, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
But and
Juet has been tough with everybody except for Shakur. He had nothing for Shakur, but that's Shakur. But yeah, it was a tough fight. And I think that kind of took some of the steam. I think people were excited about it. I'm like, all right, let's see what this guy can do. And then that fight, dude, timing matters so much in this sport. And the performances, you know, the guy rattles off like 5 awesome performances on the road, comes home and has like a tough fight. And now it's like, who cares? You know, it's tough, man. It's tough out there in these streets.
Oh, God, it's very hard. But he's like one of these unsung champs. Like, he's a legit IBF champ. He's beat big names. He's knocked them out.
Really good weight class.
Really good weight class. Featherweight is heating up. Inoue waiting in the wings. Inoue signed with Top Rank. Luis Alberto Lopez also signed with Top Rank. He could potentially fight Inoue. More likely, a Carrington fight, who I saw out in LA, who is looking for a big fight, who is being pushed up the ranks. But this fight is going to be awesome. Like, you have seen Angelo Leo on Pro Box. It's another great story of Pro Box kind of being a reclamation of sorts for these fighters. Because Leo, he lost to Stephen Fulton, and I wouldn't say he was written off, but it's just like, okay, I got to go back to the drawing board. He's reeled off like 5 straight wins since that loss to Fulton in 2021. And he gets on Pro Box, has some big wins, and now he's on ESPN. Now he's fighting for a world title in his hometown. So Angelo Leo, there's a lot of people I see on Twitter and social media picking him to win this fight.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why. That when you look at it from a technical aspect, you see where Leo can be effective. People who are listening who don't know these guys or don't really understand, you know, these lower weight classes or whatever, it really need to tune in. This is a really good fight. Angelo Leo, like you mentioned, you know, he's made a resurgence on Pro Box TV. He had two big knockouts with left hooks in both of those fights. And he looks vastly improved at this new weight class. When he fought Fulton, it kind of seemed like, and we got the interview, I got the interview as well, kind of seemed like he was like, all right, this guy's not going to be able to keep up with me, because Fulton was always known as a boxer. That fight was fought on the inside. So it was an interesting style that he chose, but Fulton was able to meet him. And basically, it was a barn burner. They fought in a phone booth the whole night, but Fulton showed that he could actually fight on the inside as well. Leo,
that was like Fulton's coming out party.
Yeah, yeah. So that was like, people like, oh, wow, Fulton's not just a boxer. He can fight too. And I think since then, Leo shows that he can box. He's not just a fighter. So I think this is a good time for him. And guys, he's a former world champion. Like, he was a world champion before that fight with Fulton. His only loss is to Stephen Fulton, one of the best in those lighter weights we've seen in a very long time. So definitely can't write this guy off. And fighting at home, man, getting a title shot at home. Problem is, the guy he's fighting, Venado, is so difficult. His style, I've been watching so much tape on both these guys, especially Venado this week. He has one of the most interesting, creative, athletic, fundamentally poor styles I've ever seen. I mean, chin up in the air.
A little Navarrete in him? Feet.
He's worse. Navarrete puts his hands up, but this guy never has his hands up. It's wild. He walks forward. He jumps up in the air with his chin in the air. But at least with Navarrete, the guy's got crazy long arms. Venado's short, super short, super short arms. Dives in face first. But his awareness, his intuition, his creativity, his balls, because he's got such charisma and machismo when he's in there. I mean, very, very fun guy to watch. Never seen him in a bad fight.
The intangibles. Yeah. He has like that. He's a winner. He's got a winner. Because
he acts like a bullfighter in there. He's got like a swag to him that is very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, all he does is win. He's ranked number one ring rankings right now. It's a division that has some big names, but they're on their way out. Like Lee Wood hasn't fought in a while, and he's talking about going up to 130. Ray Vargas is technically a champ at 126 still. Nick Ball.
No, he's not. Is he 6 foot? Ray Vargas?
Vargas? He might as well be. He is this interesting figure on that man. Nick Ball, another interesting figure who's about 5'2". He's WBA champion. Rafael Espinoza.
He's 6'1". Excuse me. Yeah. Yes. So Ray Vargas, 5'11". Espinoza, 6'1".
So this division is loaded. Espinoza, Brendan Figueroa waiting in the wings. I know they want to match up Figueroa with Fulton one day.
Figueroa.
Raymond Ford, who tough loss to Nick Ball.
Yep.
No. Yeah, right? Fought Ball.
Yep. Lost to Nick Ball on that turkey card.
He is waiting in the wings. Robesi Ramirez, who could be the best of them all, is ranked 8th, according to Ring Magazine. Josh Warrington, Angelo Leo, 10. That is not the sexiest names, but that is the deepest division in terms of 1 through 10. Where you're getting really, really good fighters here. So there's a lot of fights.
It's rare
out there
that all 10 guys could be world champions. And this weight class is it.
I don't like Warrington. I think it's a little shot, but like he's a name, and he's ranked properly at 9. Not only that, is you have Naoya Inoue just like looming over this potential weight class. Like
the monster looms.
Right. Eventually he's going to go to 126. It's a matter of when. It could be sometime next year. But when he does, it's like Canelo entering your weight class. It's legitimate money, man. So like Alberto Lopez wants to win this fight, obviously, for a number of reasons. All these guys want to keep winning because if they get into the position where they can fight Inoue, they're going to make insane amount of money and potentially knock off the number one pound-for-pound fighter. It's a really good card.
Talked about that matchup, Inoue and Lopez?
I've floated it out there. Like, I haven't talked about it too much because it's like...
That's a good fight.
We just don't know yet. We just don't know what Inoue is going to do. Obviously, I think he's going to move to 126, right? He's not going to stay 122 forever.
No.
So if Lopez keeps winning, and it's pretty clear to me that he's the class of the division, like he's emerged as the best featherweight in the world right now. Inoue always wants to fight the best, and they're both Simon Top Rank, and that could easily happen. I know Bruce Carrington has not been in this top 10, and he's really good too. That's another name too. As for the full card, Lindolfo Delgado versus Brian Flores, Abraham Perez, Vito Milnecki making his top rank debut in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
He's fighting pretty early on the card, so if you want to catch him, check in early.
That's ESPN Plus. They're going to build him up. Obviously, his biggest fights are going to come in New Jersey, New York area. That's why Top Rank signed him. What is there to do in Albuquerque, New Mexico? I'm trying to think of the last big fight there.
I don't know. I mean, one of my favorite fighters, Johnny Tapia, is obviously from there.
Wow.
Him and Danny Romero were the crosstown rivals, the Albuquerque, New Mexico. It was the battle for Albuquerque. For you guys at home, you listeners who like old school fights, Danny Romero, Johnny Tapia is one of the greats from back in the day. Bad blood, rivalry, excellent, excellent fight, evenly matched, both undefeated. Danny Romero, big power puncher. Johnny Tapia, larger than life personality.
Awesome, he's crazy. The HBO doc on him is crazy.
Crazy. Vivia Loca. Holly Holm is from Albuquerque, New Mexico, I believe. Austin Trout, I don't think he's from there, but I think he fights out of there, out of Albuquerque. Trying to think.
I don't know if he's from Albuquerque, but he's from New Mexico.
Yeah. So I don't know. I gotta look up what to do. I'm sure there's probably some. I mean, it's a little hot to go hiking. I don't know.
You named a bunch of fighters that are from there. You didn't exactly say what you're going to be doing, but it's a work trip. You know, there might be like a couple hours where you can figure out what to do. And
I'm going early enough that I will have some time to do something. I'm trying to make these trips, especially these longer West Coast ones, where I have some time to do stuff.
Yeah, I kind of forget how close New Mexico is to Vegas.
Yeah.
It's like bordering state. Mm-hmm. A little geography test for you.
Us Americans aren't like that.
No. If you were given the map, how many states do you think you could properly place?
probably less than half.
Yeah, I would like over under 20.
I was going to say 30, but I'm like, that sounds like a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot of states.
That's a lot.
It's like you know what trips me up is like the Midwest.
Yeah, that whole middle, the Bible Belt, the Midwest, all that weird shit in the middle there.
Like it's Colorado.
All my friends from down here are from all the Midwest, like Minnesota and Wisconsin, Ohio. There's a lot of them down here because they're escaping the weather. But that whole area, very, very confusing.
I don't know. I think we tried this at John Boy, like one of the silly videos that he tried to make us do that are non-sports. Like, how many states can you name? I was like, I'm not doing this because I'm just going to get destroyed on the internet. Like, if anyone even watches these videos, like,
and
I don't.
And then you're also going to be mad at yourself for being an idiot.
Right. The one I did do really good on was blindfolded, and they gave me 5 different Boar's Head deli meats.
Oh.
And I got all 5.
You're from New York, definitely. Two things you're going to get with a New Yorker. One, they don't know where any of the other states are. Two, they know their Boar's Head deli meats.
Yeah, I knew. My oven gold turkey, my salami, ham, easy. 5 for 5. Like, right away. I was like, bop, bop, bop. Me and Nikki Cass.
You're also a paisan, so come on. If you can't get deli meats, what are you doing?
Boar's Head, baby. The best. East Coast. All day long. All right. Hope everyone has a fun weekend. There's some really nice fights. A little bit something for everyone. Go watch Chris on ESPN.
I was gonna do the bad baby. Catch me outside, but no, catch me on ESPN.
That girl makes a lot of money. Yes. You ever see how much money she made last year?
Like 52 million.
It's sickening.
Ridiculous.
It's sickening.
We live in a sick world, Dan. We live in a sick world.
It's America. Get the money while you can. I hope everyone enjoys the weekend. Hope everyone enjoying their summer. Watch these fights. These are some really good fights. And watch Chris on ESPN. As always, protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. DM Chris Algieri if you know something to do in New Mexico. His DMs are wide open.
Good. Thank you.
Good night.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.